This is Joe Basso from MusicRadar.com, and I'm speaking with Joe Satriani. One of the first things I wanted to talk to you about was a story that is fairly famous in your legend, that fateful day, September 18th, 1970, when Jimi Hendrix died, and it's also the day that you quit your high school football team to devote yourself to the guitar. This is a story that's much been talked about, but I'd like for you to explain a little bit about that to me. Was guitar already a big part of your life? Was Jimi Hendrix a big part of your life? What happened that day?
Well, Jimi Hendrix was definitely a big part of my life. I started playing drums at 9, lasted for about 2 years, taking lessons, being serious about it, then started to think it was time to take a break being a musician for a bit. And during that break period, I was really taken with what was happening in what was really becoming the genre of rock. My older siblings kept laying records on me, and so that's how I got introduced to the music of Jimi Hendrix. So I was kind of like a Hendrix nut by the time that day came by, but I wasn't thinking about playing guitar. But I was standing all suited up. I went to a place called Carr Place High School on Long Island, and I was ready to start practice, and someone came out, another team member, said they had been home for lunch and saw in the news that this guy, Jimi Hendrix, had died, and did I know who he was? And I was just devastated, and I just turned around, took off my gear, quit the team, and, just like a slightly twisted Norman Rockwell kind of scene. I stood up during, dinner with the rest of the family and with my other four siblings and my parents, and I said, Jimi Hendrix died today, and I'm going to become a guitar player.
Wow.
There was a bit of silence, and I could see fear across my mother's face, but that's how it happened.
Was it just like this lightning bolt, this message from the sky?
You know, it was a sinking kind of a feeling. It wasn't an exciting feeling. I just was really, it would just kind of wipe me out, just the thought that he was not going to be around to provide my life, with what I realized at that moment was my soundtrack, a very important soundtrack to my life was those records. And so it all sort of, when you're 14, you're not thinking completely clearly, but, and it's even hard to describe, what went through my mind, because it was more of a physical rush, as much as a mental one. So between the emotions and the whole feeling of my body like it was moving into a new direction, it was a turning point, and I think that's the most obvious way of describing it, is that I realized I'd come to a crossroads in my life, if you want to call it that, and I had to take action, and that was my only option was, well, then you should play guitar, and to provide the music for yourself. And of course, from that decision to the next step was incredibly difficult, and then the next step after that was even harder, and that's when I realized, man, this playing guitar business is really difficult, and it's going to take a long time.
Both you and one of your more famous students, Steve Vai, have spoken about your marathon practice sessions, practicing for 10, 12 hours at a time, even more so. Is it like that runner's high? What is that like, to practice that long?
Yeah, I would have to say that there is a kind of a runner's high, like you mentioned. But I think that my experience in teaching other talented students is that everyone has their own way of progressing, and they all, eventually settle on a method that seems to fit with their temperament, Steve is certainly someone who can sit down and, sort of meditate on the idea of practicing and go, for 12 or 15 hours. There have been short periods of my life where I felt like I really accomplished a lot by trying to do 12 hours a day for, let's say, 2 months, and then that was it, But I've had other really talented students who've only, they go 3 or 4 hours and then that's it. Maybe they skip days and, their bodies seem to get them to the next step on a regular basis with less repetition. And you know, part of that, I think, is that we're not all starting at the same spot with the same amount of physical talent, physical attributes, or mental information about music. Some students, you know, they come in, maybe they've taken music classes in school, but the physical part of guitar playing is new to them. But they can use that intellectual part to actually push them through the physical part faster. Then you've got other people like myself who are actually starting, you know, music theory and the physical part of playing all at the same time. So it might actually require a lot more hours to figure stuff out, to transfer it from book to fingers, from ear to fretboard, that kind of thing. You know, sometimes you have people who have been playing guitar for 12 years. They have all the facility in the world, but they have no idea where the notes are or what chords are called. And, you know, so we're all different in how we approach it. So I've never focused on how many hours you practice as being some sort of rule of thumb, you know, where you've got to do 8 hours a day or else you're not going to progress or something like that. I think anything goes, really.
When Steve Vai did come to you for lessons, he was a teenager, you were a teenager, you had already taught a few people, but what was it about Steve that struck you as being special? Could you tell right off that there was something a little different about this guy?
Well, I think he, you know, you wouldn't put it this way as being teenagers, as we both were, but let's say we shared the sense of the absurd, you know. I mean, if you were, back then, if you were a fan of all the crazy stuff Hendrix was doing and Frank Zappa, well, then you were in a minority, but it was a great little group of people to be associated with. So that part really helped. Because, you know, 99% of my other students, if I put on Zappa or I put on Machine Gun, they just look at me with a blank face, you know, and because they, you know, they wanted to play like Jim Croce or something like that, you know. So that helped. And then, of course, Steve's appetite for practicing and for learning was fantastic. I was asked to turn over stuff that I was just learning myself, you know, just a few weeks earlier. And so we rapidly went from being, you know, me the teacher and Steve the student into being sort of comrades searching for any information we could to get ourselves to be, you know, guitar gods, because that was our quest, you know, that we shared.
You spent a lot of time in San Francisco playing in, you played in a new wave band, you worked in a guitar shop. Did you think during this time that your big break wouldn't come?
Certainly. I think that's, isn't that a fear that every musician has? You get up in the morning and you go, what am I doing with my life, you know? I think that the music business is, you know, serves up, you know, failure notices on a regular basis. And there's a lot of fear and loathing going on all the time. And it can be very inspiring if you handle it the right way. And certainly, you mentioned, you know, being in a new wave band. I played with Jeff Campitelli and Andy Milton in a band called The Squares. And, you know, it was during that period, towards the end, that I decided to try to just record some instrumental stuff just for fun, really. And, I think that... it's funny how things happen like that, you know. Things, you get put into a position and you do something just for fun, and then all of a sudden you realize, wow, you know, my chosen path is the wrong path, and my left turn path, the thing I do just as a lark, is actually, that should be my chosen path, you know. And it was just, that's kind of like what happened, I guess, you know. I mean, maybe I was lucky that we didn't succeed, you know, in that band for so many years. And it sort of created this energy in this opposite direction for me.
Surfing with the Alien, of course, broke you through to a huge audience. It cracked the Billboard Top 20. What were your goals, though, at that point? Obviously, you wanted to be successful, but could you have envisioned the kind of massive success that that record brought?
No. You know, we were taking baby steps back then. I mean, to get the green light to record Surfing with the Alien was a huge thing, you know, because, as you said, you know, that Night of this Earth which was something I recorded on a credit card and was licensed by Relativity. That was a huge step. But then that next record, I had to sort of audition live, you know, at the China Club one night in Manhattan. They were all looking at me like, who is this guy? He doesn't look like a rock star. You know, there is no such thing as instrumental rock music anymore. And what are we going to do with this guy, you know? I think that particular night, they heard me play. There was something in what I was doing which made them realize that I wasn't just going to do some kind of dark shredding record or brooding jazz rock fusion thing. You know, that because I kept saying, you know, look, I want to put Mix Hendrix and Chuck Berry, and I've got all these ideas about, you know, making a record that actually holds together like a rock record, you know, with an important sequence and all this. And they're looking at me like, you're out of your mind, you know. So I played, I guess, some of it for them that night, and they got it. So getting a green light to record that record was a big deal. But myself and Jeff and my co-producer, John Cuniberti, you know, we figured when we're done with this, they're definitely sending us out of town. You know, it'll be, thank you very much, go away, you know. It was a struggle to stay within a budget, which we didn't, you know, and the budget doubled, and we were trading studio time, we were bartering just to try to make up for it. I think about a third of the budget actually just came directly out of my pocket just by asking for favors around town, and because the label just refused to spend any more money on it. But we, you know, we spent $29,000, we made this record, we handed it in, and I just thought, okay, I'll go back to my other life, you know, and start thinking about what you asked me before, you know, things not working out too well, you know. But we were surprised by how it was received. You know, it slipped into the Billboard charts at 186, and I was thrilled. I mean, we all called each other and said, can you believe it? We're on a chart. A chart of any kind, you know. and then it just sort of slowly kept moving forward. And so, you know, I mean, you asked me, did I ever think it would get that kind of success? Absolutely not. I mean, it was like a week-to-week thing. We would celebrate just a little bit more because we weren't, you know, we didn't get that call to get out of town, you know, to pack up and take our stuff with us, you know. And then all of a sudden, it was like riding a tidal wave, you know.